Apocalypse. Mariners sailing close to the shores of Tuscany heard a voice cry out from the hills, the trees, and the sky. The great god Pan is dead. Pan, god of panic. The sudden awareness that everything is alive and significant. The date was December 25, 1 AD. But Pan lives on in the realm of imagination, in writing and painting and music. Look at Van Gogh's sunflowers writhing with pretentious life. Listen to the pipes of Pan in Jujuka. Now Pan is neutralized, framed in museums, entombed in books, relegated to folklore. But art is spilling out of its frames into subway graffiti. Will it stop there? Consider an apocalyptic statement. Nothing is true, everything is permitted. Hassan E. Saba, the old man of the mountain. Not to be interpreted as an invitation to all manner of unrestrained and destructive behavior, that would be a minor episode, which would run its course. Everything is permitted because nothing is true. It is all make-believe, illusion, dream, art. When art leaves the frame, and the written word leaves the page. Not merely the physical frame and page, but the frames and pages of assigned categories. A basic disruption of reality itself occurs. The literal realization of art. Success will write apocalypse across the sky. The artist aims for a miracle. The painter wills his pictures to move off the canvas with a separate life. Movement outside of the picture, and one rent in the fabric is all it takes for pandemonium to sluice through. Last act, the end. This is where we all came in. The final apocalypse is when every man sees what he sees, feels what he feels, hears what he hears. The creatures of all your dreams and nightmares are right here, right now, solid as they ever were or ever will be. The electric vitality of careening subways, faster, 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 stations flash by in a blur. Pan, god of panic, whips screaming crowds as millions of faces look up at the torn sky. Off the track, off the track. The planet is pulling loose from its moorings, careening into space. Spilling cities and mountains and seas into the void. Spinning faster and faster as days and nights flash by like subway stations. Iron penis chimneys ejaculate blue sparks in a reek of ozone. Tunnels crunch down teeth of concrete and steel, flattening cars like beer cans. Graffiti through glass and steel like acid races across the sky in tornadoes of flaming colors. Cherry pickers with satin brushes big as a door inch through Wall Street, leaving a vast souvenir postcard of the Grand Canyon. Water trucks slosh out paint. outlaw painters armed with paint pistols paint everything and everyone in reach. Survival artists, paint cans strapped to their backs, grenades at their belts, paint anything and anybody within range. Skyriders dogfight, collide and explode. Telephone poles dance electric jigs in swirling, crackling wires. Neon explosions and tornadoes splash through ruined cities. Volcanoes spew molten colors as the Earth's crust buckles and splinters into jigsaw pieces. Household appliances revolt. Washing machines snatch clothes from the guests. Bellowing hoovers suck off makeup and wigs and false teeth. Electric toothbrushes leap into screaming mouths. The clothes dryers turn gardens into dust bowls. Garden tools whiz through lawn parties impaling the guests, who are hacked to fertilizer by industrious Japanese hatchets. Those of misshapen bulbous plants spring from their bones, covering golf courses, swimming pools, country clubs, and tasteful dwellings. At my back, faster and faster, I always hear, hurry up. Energy ground down into, please, it's time closing. Sidewalks and streets by billions of feet and tires erupt from manholes and tunnels, break out with volcanic force. Let it come down, careening subways faster and faster, stations blur by. Pan whips screaming crowds with flaming pikes. Millions of faces look up at the torn sky. Off the track, off the track. Planet is pulling loose from its moorings, careening off into space, spilling cities and mountains and seas into the void, faster and faster. Skyscrapers scrape rents of blue and white paint from the sky. The rivers swirl with color. Nitrous ochres and reds eat through the bridges falling into the rivers, splashing colors across warehouses and piers and roads and buildings. Amokart floods inorganic mold, stirring passions of metal and glass, steel girders writhing in mineral lust burst from their concrete covers. Walls of glass melt and burn with madness in a billion crazed eyes. Bridges buck cars and trucks into the rivers. The sidewalks run ahead faster and faster. Energy ground down into sidewalks and streets by billions of feet and tires, erupts from manholes and tunnels, breaks out with volcanic force. Let it come down. Caught in New York beneath the animals of the village, the piper pulled down the sky.
I want to tell you about my childhood. Nothing will prevent me, neither close attention nor the desire to be exact, from writing and speaking words that sing.
All active. Calling.
Calling all reactive agents.
All active.
Calling all active agents. Recalling all active agents. Recalling all active reagents. Calling.
Now, these experiments started not on tape recorders, but on paper. In 1959, Brian Geisen said that writing is 50 years behind painting and applied the montage technique to words on a page. And this technique had already been used in painting at that time for 50 years. It was, in fact, kind of old hat in painting. Brian copied out phrases from newspapers and magazines, then took a scissors and cut these selections into pieces and rearranged the fragments at random. And these cut-up experiments appeared in Minutes to Go in 1959. When you experiment with cut-ups over a period of time, you find that some of the cut-ups and rearranged texts seem to refer to future events. I cut up an article on written by John Paul Getty and got, "It's a bad thing to sue your own father." This was a rearrangement and wasn't in the original text. And a year later, one of his sons did sue him. I mean, it's just purely extraneous information. It meant nothing to me. I had nothing to gain on either side. We had no explanation for this at the time. It just suggesting that perhaps when you cut into the future leaks out. But we simply accepted it and continued the experiments. The next step was cut-ups on the tape recorder, and Brian was the first to take this obvious step. Now, the first tape recorder cut-ups were a simple extension of cut-ups on paper. You record, there are many ways of doing these, but here's one way. You record, say, 10 minutes on the recorder. Then you spin the reel backwards or forwards, just like that, without recording. Stop at random and cut in a phrase. Now, of course, when you've cut in that phrase, you've wiped out what's ever there, and you have a new juxtaposition. Now, how random is random? We know so much that we don't consciously know that we know that perhaps the cut-in was not random. The operator, on some level, knew just where he was cutting in. As you know, on some level, exactly where you were and what you were doing 10 years ago at this particular time. But you couldn't, most of you couldn't, there are a few freaks that can, make that knowledge consciously available. And the same way, while you're doing the tape, on some level, you know just exactly where your words are. So cut-ups put you in touch with what you know and do not know that you know. Now, of course, this procedure on the tape recorder produces new words by alter juxtaposition, just as new words are produced by cut-ups on paper. Well, we went on to exploit the potentials of the tape recorder, cut up, slow down, speed up, run backwards, inch the tape, that means work it back and forth across the tape head, play several tracks at once, cut back and forth between two recorders. Now, here are some tapes which Brian made with all the technical facilities of the BBC in London, and they show, I think, what can be done with a human voice and one phrase.
Calling all reagents active.
All agents active. Calling all agents reactive.
Calling all active agents.
Calling all agents active.
Calling reagents active.
All.
Calling reactive.
All agents.
Calling
all reactive agents.
Calling active.
All
reagents.
Calling agents all reactive.
Agents active.
Calling all
reactive.
Calling agents.
All
agents. Calling.
Real calling active agents.
Real active agents calling.
Real agents active calling.
Real calling active
agents.
Agents calling all reactive.
Agents calling
real active.
Agents calling active.
All re.
Agents calling all active.
Re.
Agents calling reactive.
All.
Agents calling active.
Real.
Reactive agents all calling.
Reactive agents all calling.
Reactive calling agents all. Recalling all active agents.
Recalling active agents
all.
Recalling agents active.
all.
I can't be calm, simple for more than a moment when I'm with you. Because of want, because your eyes are holes. In want, everything is always being risked. Being is being overturned and ends up on the other side. It's me who's let me play with fire. Whatever is I are the remnants. I've never considered any results before those results happened. At this moment, if I could only roam myself under your feet, I would, and the whole world would see what I am. See how easy it is for me to ask to be regarded as low and dirty, to ask to be spat upon. This isn't sluttishness, but it is the language of a woman who thinks. It's a role I have always learned for myself. I'm a woman who's alone, outside the accepted. Outside the law, which is language. This is the only role that allows me to be as intelligent as I am and to avoid persecution. But now I'm not thinking for myself, because my life is disintegrating right under me. My life's disintegrating under me, so I'll not bear the lie. My inability to bear that lie is what's giving me strength. Even when I believed in meaning, when I felt defined by collision and opposition, and this opposition between sexual desire and the search for self-reclamation and self-knowledge was tearing me apart. Even back then, I knew that I was only lying. That I was lying superbly, disgustingly, triumphantly. Life doesn't exist inside language. Too bad for me. Kathy.
Let us consider two important factors, the two poles of the creation of art. The artist on the one hand, and on the other, the spectator, who later becomes the posterity. To all appearances, the artist acts like a mediumistic being who, from the labyrinth beyond time and space, seeks his way out to a clearing. If we give the attributes of a medium to the artist, we must then deny him the state of consciousness on the aesthetic plane about what he is doing or why he is doing it. All his decisions in the artistic execution of the work rest with pure intuition and cannot be translated into a self-analysis, spoken or written, or even thought out. T.S. Eliot, in his essay on tradition and individual talent, writes, The more perfect the artist, the more completely separate in him will be the man who suffers and the mind which creates. The more perfectly will the mind digest and transmute the passions which are its material. Millions of artists create. Only a few thousands are discussed or accepted by the spectator, and many less again are consecrated by posterity. In the last analysis, the artist may shout from all the rooftops that he is a genius. He will have to wait for the verdict of the spectator in order that his declarations take a social value, and that finally posterity includes him in the primers of artist history. I know that this statement will not meet with the approval of many artists who refuse this mediumistic role and insist on the validity of their awareness in the creative act, yet art history has consistently decided upon virtues of a work of art through considerations completely divorced from the rationalized explanation of the artist. If the artist, as a human being, full of the best intentions toward himself and the whole world, plays no role at all in the judgment of his own work, how can one describe the phenomenon which prompts the spectator to react critically to the work of art? In other words, how does this reaction come about? This phenomenon is comparable to a transference from the artist to the spectator in the form of an aesthetic osmosis taking place through the inert matter, such as pigment, piano, or marble. But before we go further, I want to clarify our understanding of the word art, to be sure, without any attempt at a definition. What I have in mind is that art may be bad, good, or indifferent, but whatever adjective is used, we must call it art. And bad art is still art in the same way that a bad emotion is still an emotion. Therefore, when I refer to art coefficient, it will be understood that I refer not only to great art, but I am trying to describe the subjective mechanism which produce art in the raw state, à l'état brut, bad, good, or indifferent. In the creative act, the artist goes from intention to realization through a chain of totally subjective reactions. His struggle toward the realization is a series of efforts, pains, satisfaction, refusals, decisions, which also cannot and must not be fully self-conscious, at least on the aesthetic plane. The result of this struggle is a difference between the intention and its realization, a difference which the artist is not aware of. Consequently, in the chain of reactions accompanying the creative act, a link is missing. This gap representing the inability of the artist to express fully his intention, this difference between what he intended to realize and did realize, is the personal art coefficient contained in the work. In other words, the personal art coefficient is like an arithmetical relation between the unexpressed but intended and the unintentionally expressed. To avoid a misunderstanding, we must remember that this art coefficient is a personal expression of art à l'état brut, that is, still in a raw state, which must be refined as pure sugar from molasses by the spectator. The digit of this coefficient has no bearing whatsoever on his verdict. The creative act takes another aspect when the spectator experiences the phenomenon of transmutation. Through the change from inert matter into a work of art, an actual transubstantiation has taken place, and the role of the spectator is to determine the weight of the work on the aesthetic scale. All in all, the creative act is not performed by the artist alone. The spectator brings the work in contact with the external world by deciphering and interpreting its inner qualification, and thus adds his contribution to the creative act. This becomes even more obvious when posterity gives the final verdict and sometimes rehabilitates forgotten artists.
Hotel of the Lilac Eyes. Addressed to someone other than Bataille. I can no longer cry. I vomit. I no longer laugh. I grind my teeth. How I despise this dry and evil laugh. It graffitis all of my senses, every sentence which manages to escape, every gesture which is decomposing, the me which other people think they see better than me. That I understand it better than them, than you, and with an irony that's ferocious. And then I cry. My teeth grind. I vomit. I know full well that I'm not going to see you again. You and all the others. It's time to quit this play. It's time to completely hold my life in my own hands. To be alone in the desert, the place of stones. To be there as me, and no longer as someone who hardly resembles me. To be me, I must turn to dreaming. Listen. Every day of my life, death followed me. I saw it in the red soil. In mud, in the sky of stars. I saw it partaking in the intense hatred and joys of others. Other people shared it with me as if it was a miracle, not common. They believe that death is Christ. I saw death in the horror of the simultaneity of the frightfulness and the sweetness of language, of human communication. Death was a line of the horizon, as simple as anything, geometrical. My sight is clear. I'm not drunk. What's making me seemingly drunk is death, is following my life, rendering me so exhausted, I'm breaking. This death, whom I call mine, my shade, would do well to drop me off on some street corner as quickly as possible, or hand me over to the other shades for whom I've got respect. But I'm not going to be broken like this. I've got my childhood back. I found my childhood in pavement and in leaves, in the unstable earth and in the water.